now tuned in to the Commissioner's Conversation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is
Commissioner Gordon.
Yes, sir. Welcome back. You are tuned in to the Commissioner's Conversation. I am your host, Commissioner Gordon. This week, I have the pleasure of having defensive extraordinaire, host of 92.9 The Game's morning show, Hugh Douglas. Hugh, how you feeling this week, brother?
What's going on, Commissioner? What's going on, man? How you been?
Man, I'm pretty good now that this football is in. We got college football. We got this NFL football. So I'm enjoying these weekends, bro. I don't know about you.
Oh, yeah, man, because we got something to do now. We got something to talk about. You know, we got an excuse to leave the house.
Right.
Especially significant other, you got an excuse to leave the house, go somewhere for a hot minute, get out the crib.
Yeah, definitely, man, and enjoy yourself. I don't know. I don't like leaving the house to watch games. If I really plan on watching the game, because, you know, we're in Atlanta, dog, and there's so many distractions. Mm-hmm. You might not watch the game, whether you're talking to somebody or, you know, whether you're sitting at a table with a group of people, besides the other distractions, besides, you know, of the opposite sex. I usually don't like going out and watching the game. If I'm going to sit there and I'm going to really watch and try to figure out what's going on, I want to kind of be at the crib so I can kind of see. I can rewind if I need to. You know, we got, you know, everything.
Yeah.
You can rewind and do all that stuff.
Yeah, but I get it. I do Falcons games like that because, you know, we got to watch them. We got to watch Atlanta Falcons play. But college football, man, you know, the good thing about it, it's so many games on. You're watching, trying to watch as many games as you can because, you know, we're talking about them. Like, I might be watching the Georgia game, but Alabama playing, and it might be a big play in the Alabama game. So I want to be at a place where they got a couple of games on. So
right.
You just, you know, figure out what you want to watch. And then when you get home, you watch the college scoreboard to see how the day played out and to see who made the highlight reel.
And see, for me in the NFL, I do red zone like that. So uh-huh. I figured out me, if I'm trying to navigate the ticket back and forth, and I'm going to get stuck on a game, or I'm going to hold on to something too long and I'm going to miss a big play on the other side. And last year I wound up, you know, just watching really check out red zone, see what it's hitting on, watch red zone. And I was like, oh damn, this is like me having a remote, but they know when to actually turn to the game. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. It's always when somebody's scoring, I think it's a scoring threat.
Right.
They flip to the next game. So yeah, that's pretty cool. I don't have it, but I do know a lot of people like to watch it like that. But you know what the funny thing about being here in Atlanta is this. We get caught, and I'm assuming it's like this everywhere. The team that you're rooting for, people get caught on certain moments, certain instances that might set up the scoring drive or something like that. Or, you know, why did the coach call a timeout in this situation? How did he get open or something like that? So you want to kind of watch the play as it develops fully. So I kind of like to do that. So I try to key in on one game at a time, like see here being in Atlanta, talking about the Falcons all the time.
Right.
So I want to watch that as close as possible. As a matter of fact, I DVR it every time so that I can go back and look and see what exactly happened. Because whether you know it or not, Commissioner Gordon, everybody watched the game different and they see different things every time they watch the game. So, you know, I got to go back and make sure it happened the way that somebody else said it happened.
Yeah, that's true, because I've been in conversations with people and we'll be talking about the same play. We'll describe it differently and then we'll have different takes on it. So as we're going through it, I'm like, no, we're talking, you know how you have a conversation and you describe something, I describe something, and we're like, no, we're talking about the same thing. And then
yeah,
I'm looking like, did you watch it? You know what I'm saying? Did you watch it or did you hear somebody say something? Or because clearly we saw it differently.
Yeah, I mean, because I think a lot of times, especially when you're emotionally invested with a team and you don't like the way certain things are going, you might see it differently and you might be watching it from a upset angle. And so then you got to go back and say, wait a minute, I don't recall that play happening like that. Let me go check the tape. You got to go to the tape and you got to see what's really going on. So, yeah, that's big. You got to do that here a lot in Atlanta, especially with Matt Ryan quarterback.
Oh, man. I find it like Atlanta fans and me being one of them growing up here. Like I always tell the story about how like my family is from Atlanta. So it's not like we moved in or whatever, like my, especially my mom's side. My mom's side, they grew up here, all of that stuff. So as mm-hmm. they were growing up, that's when the, you know, in the 60s, when the team came in like 65, 66, that was now their team. They didn't have to root for anybody else. So when I come around in mm-hmm. the 80s, it's like, nah, dog, you root for the Falcons. I don't care how sorry we are, how bad it is, this is your team. So I came up in that, but I always see that we do, even if the game is being called fairly even on both sides, we always feel like the ref is rooting for the other team because it's us. You know, we always feel like this call is going against us because whatever. And I think that happens a lot in every particular area. I don't think anybody feels like the ref is always on their side. But here we do look at it as it's us against the world because everybody hates Atlanta.
Yeah, well, you know, it's Atlanta is it's a unique situation, man. I love being here. I love watching the Dirty Birds play. I love interacting with the diehard fans of the Atlanta Falcons. And this is the thing that I've come to notice. Like in the city, everybody riding for the Falcons. You might not go to the game, but everybody in Atlanta in the inner city is riding for the Falcons. Win, lose, or draw. That's what they do, man. And that's what I love about it. You know, you might not be at, everybody might not be at the game, but damn it, you're going to be at the tailgate.
Yeah.
That's what Hey, you might not have tickets for the game, but you got, you're going to be at the tailgate because that's where everybody's going to be.
Yeah, man. And that's what it became like. And that's for, in terms of being a fan, it became that way because you want to still be a part of it. But you didn't like the product all the time that was taking place inside the building.
Yeah.
But you wanted to be a part of that environment. You wanted to be a part of that spirit. Like, I've gone to tailgates where, you know, it's three or four TVs. It's a live setup. They got stripper pole going on. They got three or four, not food trucks, but just dudes with big barrel grills about the size of your couch. And nobody is intending on going into any game because we're going
to... Nobody. Nobody.
Yeah, we're going to watch this out here. We got the ticket. They put up the satellite. We got the ticket, and we just chilling out here, and we'll be here when y'all come out, whether you happy, sad, whatever. You can come back out here, and you can start back partying.
That's the beautiful thing about it, man. I got a friend who last week, last game, when they were here, home, the first game of the season, that went to the game and ended up partying because somebody's TV broke down. They needed a new TV. They just happened to be the closest person that lives in the area, so they dropped the TV off and ended up hanging out. I mean, that's what it is, man. That's the beautiful part about being here, you know, because, you know, you might wake up on a Sunday and fall off in a tailgate. You ain't even know you ain't even plan on going. And you fall off at a tailgate, you end up watching the game outside the parking lot. I mean, that's the beauty of it, man. And you talk about, we doing this from September to December for the most part.
Right.
You know, hey, you might catch a cold day every now and then, but boy, by noon, the sun coming up and it's going to get warm. So you're going to be all right. You're going to be all right if you're sitting outside.
Yeah. The only bad days here is when it rain, man. Outside of rain, the weather's going to always be nice. Like, I feel sorry for fans in like Pittsburgh, Buffalo. You see them, like, Buffalo fans are so crazy with it. They setting stuff on fire, dog.
Yeah,
and jumping into the
and doing WWE moves and all that. Yeah, it's different in Buffalo. Bills Mafia, they are definitely a different breed. Definitely a different breed.
And it's so wild. I'm like, how bored, how cold, how all of this stuff, how many drinks do you have to have for me to say, I'm going to set this table on fire, I'm jumping off my truck to land on this table on fire, hoping that it break, because if it don't, I'm on this mud like meat on the grill.
Yeah. I mean, but that's what they do, man. You know, that's their idea of fun. And they become unique individuals that everybody talk about. When you talk about Bills Mafia, it's almost synonymous with pro wrestling or doing some pro wrestling dumb stuff.
Yeah.
You know, jumping off of tables or whatever, jumping on tables. And hitting people in the back of the head with chairs and things of that nature, is they go hand in hand now.
Yeah, I don't know. There's some people have a different version of fun than I seem to have, because
Oh, yeah, like, yeah.
I like the fun that we have down here. Like I said, if I go to the tailgate, I like looking at the people over on the stripper poles and everybody inviting you to have a plate, because even you can go to a tailgate here, maybe know a person and just get comfortable. You make a joke or you start talking football and all of a sudden everybody's offering you food, everybody's offering you beer.
Oh, you're good at the tailgate here in the A. You definitely gonna eat good. And hey, if you're a single cat, you might make a love connection, because it'd be jumping off. It'd be definitely jumping off at the tailgates, no doubt. No doubt at all.
So, shoot, let's get into some football, man. I'm looking at the league, and it's only week two. And I talked, you know, we kind of talked about it before we started recording, but it's so many people hurt, whether it's your quarterback, you know, you got a long list of quarterbacks hurt, whether it's your end. Like, you got Watt hurt. You got so many injuries that are happening in the league, and it's just week two going into week three.
Mm-hmm.
I ask you, because I talk about this all the time, like, when negotiating came down and they decided to add this 17th week, why wasn't there a push or more of a push? Because I'm pretty sure there was a push. Why wasn't there more of a push for a second bye week or – like, to expand the roster to, like, just add three more guys, 55 players or something like that? Why wouldn't the union try to get in on something like that?
I think that there was a push to try to add more guys. I don't know what happened with that. That fell to the wayside. And as far as the bye week is concerned, you know, this year, they had an extra week before the season started. They had, like, in between those three preseason games, they had a week where they just, you know, college football kicked off. Mm. They had it called week zero, and they had that, and there was no NFL being played. So they had a week to get prepared. I think they considered that the bye week to try to get everybody healthy. And as you know, didn't a whole lot of cats play in preseason.
Right.
You know, when you talk about the majority of the guys that played, there were majority young guys, majority guys that were probably in their second or third season and rookies. So they kept all the veterans basically on the sideline. I think that's the route that they're going to probably end up going moving forward, you know, with the preseason games and everything. And it's hard to say. You look at the data, you know, you take the Atlanta Falcons, for example. They looked horrible in the first game. They had a big bounce back week the second week against Tampa Bay. Granted, they didn't win the game, but they looked much better in that second week as opposed to that first week. And then you had some teams that went out in the first week and they handled their business. Jameis Winston. He went out there and he took care of business. So, you know, it's just hard to say. I think the data, it all depends on which side you fall on. There's data to support either argument when it comes to whether or not you should have played in the preseason or not. But to answer your question, Commissioner, I think they put that extra week in there, that week in between the season, because that's their way of giving that extra bye week that you're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, and that's cool. Like, I did kind of take notice of that you had that extra week. But I'm looking at a bunch of different schedules, and I'm like, damn, if I have a bye week in, let's say, week five, I got to run off 11 to 12 more straight games, you know what I'm saying? And with nonstop, and then hopefully roll into a playoff, you know, scenario. And that's going to be a lot of wear and tear, because if you got teams that's running 12 straight games, man, and then we got to play a wild card game with no break in there, those teams are going to look different than, you know, some of the other teams who may have had a late bye week.
Well, I think it all depends on how you set up your team, how you practice in the beginning of the year, and how you practice moving forward. Andy Reid was a good at setting his teams up to play well towards the end of the year. So that means you practice hard at the beginning of the year. You know, you had your shoulder pads on when you could actually wear shoulder pads in training camp and things of that nature. And then as the season progressed, you curtailed that off a little bit. But the one thing that you kept when you were in practice, you always had to go up tempo. Everything was always fast. And as the season progressed, practices became a little bit shorter. And they were modified a little bit where you had days where, you know, you had maintenance days and things of that nature. So I think if you build your team the right way, and if you have a philosophy, you have a blueprint on how to get your team to play better late in the season, you could be okay.
Yeah, I think it's funny because I was listening to somebody and they were talking about Green Bay. And, you know, they had the whole Aaron Rodgers. Everybody jumped on Aaron Rodgers talking about how they didn't look inspired in week one. And then, you know, week two come around and they basically mutilate Detroit. But I mean, it's Detroit, so it's to be expected. But they kind of reference the same thing to say, okay, they're starting out, and you're going in a trajectory where, like you said, you want to be at your peak later on in the season, as opposed to the beginning of the season. You don't want to look like a world beater week one and then be down in the dumps week 17, week 18, because you just basically went in the wrong direction. So, yeah, I do understand how that goes. I mean, just to kind of shift gears real quick, because, like I said, I know we don't have a lot of time. I know you heard the comments that Tom Brady made in terms of the basically saying the NFL has gotten soft, and you don't expect for a quarterback to say this, but he's lobbying for the defense. Like, he's saying that same thing that we've always said, it's an offensive game, and mm-hmm. the offense gets all the calls, the offense gets all the rule changes. And I thought about it, I think it may have been the Falcons game that I was watching, but there was a time, I think it was the Falcons game, there was a player got through, he basically broke through the line, and he's falling down, and he reaches mm-hmm. the quarterback, and as he reaches the quarterback, he's falling, so he has no choice but to grab him around his knee or around his shin, and they threw mm-hmm. and they threw the flag for, you know, hitting the quarterback, roughing the, they basically call it roughing the passer. And I thought to myself, like, mm-hmm. damn, where are you supposed to hit the man if you have to hit him between, you can't hit him up top, because then it's a targeting and you're going to be ejected. You mm-hmm. can't hit him too low. Like, what, as a defender in today's NFL, like, how would you go about tackling a guy?
Well, you better hope he has the ball when you're tackling. I mean, this is a quarterback-driven league, and that's just the bottom line. You talk about when people go to games and you talk about the longevity of the players that play, mostly it's the quarterbacks. You right. talk about Brady and how long he's been in the game. You talk about Matt Ryan, how long he's been playing. You talk about Matthew Stafford. You're talking about guys who have been playing at a high level for a long time. And Aaron Rodgers, another guy. They are the guys that make the NFL go. So if you're the league, you want to protect the guys that people come to see. You're not going to the game. You're not going to a Green Bay game late in the season if Aaron Rodgers isn't playing. You know, sure. I don't care who is on the offensive side of the ball. I don't care if you had Reggie White out there playing defense for the Green Bay Packers still. You're not coming to see Reggie White as great a football player as he was. You come to see offense. You come to see the quarterback. So that's why the rules are the way that they are, because they're designed to protect the quarterback and keep them on the field, because that's the guy that people are coming to see.
Now, how shocking was it to hear that come from Tom Brady, of all people? Like, nobody – you might hear from a receiver – from maybe a lineman, but to come mm-hmm. from the quarterback of all quarterbacks, like, did it make you scratch your head? Or you like, hell yeah, thank you, Tom.
No, you know what? Basically, I just thought, I was like, hell, I mean, the irony. I mean, you're the guy that's benefiting
right.
from the fact that the league is designed the way it is. You know, you talk about even when you're in training camp, and you do, the days that you do wear shoulder pads and you do have to hit, you're getting touched every day as a lineman. The only time the quarterback ever receives any contact is on Sunday.
Right.
You get close to the quarterback and you're a young player, you're out of there. If you accidentally, if you come too close to him when he's in his throwing motion in practice, you got a good chance you're going to get cut. So, you know, it's one of those things, like I said, quarterbacks play forever, man. I played the wrong position. If I played quarterback, I'd probably still be in the league, you know, if I could actually play. But, yeah, it's one of those things, man, where that's the position that people come to see, and it's never going to change, because they're the ones that make the game go.
Yeah, I've had to change my stance a little bit on a couple QBs and a couple, I mean, just because I see how the game is working, how the game is running. Like, right now, we're all split between the pocket QBs and then some of your run QBs. And just because I've always said, just because a player can run doesn't mean he should be running.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always taken the position of, I thought that the Ravens are overdoing it with Lamar Jackson. And because he's taking all these hits, it becomes, you know, clearly, you're getting hit, and you're getting hit up top in your shoulders. It's going to be harder to come out and then come out third and seven and then throw, make a legit, a good pass, a 100% accurate pass, as opposed to a guy who's just standing there with a clean pocket. But watching the game this past week, they kind of showed you against Kansas City, like, okay, this is the recipe. We're down, we're still running the ball, and we're still relying on it. And it showed a little bit more balance, but I still say, like, he can't be your leading rusher and have that same longevity that you were just talking about, that you were saying with, like, an Aaron Rodgers or a Tom Brady.
No. And you see a guy that's starting to show the wear and tear. I mean, he's playing well. He's still playing at a high level. Ben Roethlisberger, he wasn't much of a runner, but he took a lot of hits because he's a big body guy. And they're starting to catch up with him. Lamar Jackson is a smaller frame guy. And you worry about, like, you know, yeah, he has all the speed in the world. But, you know, he messes around and he falls and dislocates his shoulder, whatever. That's an aspect of your game that you sorely need that you're missing. And that's the passing attack. You know, you can beat guys with the legs, but I think that the game is still a traditional game where you still got to beat folks from the pocket. You still, right. If you want to have success, you got to be able to throw the ball down the field. You got to be able to stand in that barrel and deliver the football down the field in key moments. Now, being able to run enhances all of that. I look at a guy like Russell Wilson, and the reason why he's had so much success, because he can run, but he only runs when he has to. And when he runs, he makes damn sure that he gets down and doesn't take any contact. He takes what the defense gives him. He runs and he gets down. I think that's partly because of that baseball background that he has.
Right.
So he know how to slide. He know how to get out the way and all that. And so that's why he's as good as he is, because he can do all that. Lamar Jackson learns how to do that, man, and quit taking penitentiary chances with the football and things like that. I think he'll have the kind of career that Russell Wilson has. Because guess what? Russell Wilson's a Hall of Famer, man. He's at a Hall of Fame pace. So, yeah, he'll definitely be a Hall of Famer.
I think I had to – so I wound up having to watch Kyler Murray, because my stance had always been, if he's doing the same thing that a Lamar Jackson is doing, or maybe even Russell Wilson is doing, that because I've seen him up close and you know, right in front of me, he doesn't have the frame – that he could just carry those hits and just take those hits. But once, and I have friends of mine, like, they, you know, they're coaches, they're high school coaches at the high school level, but they were telling me, like, watch the game. And so I sat down, I watched one of the games, and what I wound up doing is, he does do stuff that's similar to Russell Wilson, but what I think the offensive coordinators are doing to help him is that they're, like, it seemed like the plays are pretty, it's like bootleg, but they're predicated on him going sideline to sideline. He's doing more sideline to sideline running with his eyes downfield. And what they're doing is they're moving the pocket.
Yeah, rolling pocket. Yeah.
So they're moving the pocket. They're rolling the pocket for him, and he's kind of going sideline to sideline. And if nothing's there, then he take that 7 to 8 yards, and he slides. And so in that area, he's not taking as many hits as I thought he would have been taking, like he was like a Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, I mean, because that's what you have to do, man. He's a slighter frame guy. You don't want your quarterback taking those hits, because if you do, he ain't going to be on the field. You're going to be playing with that backup quarterback, and you don't want that out there. You know, especially when you talk about how much pressure a running quarterback puts on defenses now. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, they stress guys like that, that have that ability to run and throw the ball, they stress your defense out to no end. They really, really do.
Yeah, and to that, we're seeing it a little bit with Tua Tagovailoa. Like, I don't know if they figured out the formula just yet on how to work with him within his strength and not have him take those hits. Or is it – I mean, the dude just could be, you know, Mr. Glass out here.
Yeah, you know what the unfortunate thing about that is that I think part of they when they drafted him, he was supposed to be the guy. He got the start last year. Then you start hearing the rumors about Deshaun Watson. He gets hurt again. Now those rumors are starting to kick up again. It's unfortunate for him that, you know, he plays a position that is in dire need. You know, they're trying to get new quarterbacks and they're trying to groom them. But the unfortunate thing about it is you don't have the luxury or anything like that, the timing. You don't have the timing, or you don't have the time to groom.
Right.
Like you normally would, especially if you haven't shown anything. So that's the tough part. You can't make the club in the tub, man. And being hurt, like he's been hurt, that's been a huge problem for him.
Well, I've always said that even almost on every level, that there's, especially once you get to college in the NFL, because it's such a win right now demand, it's such a win right now environment, that very few coaches are actually coaching. And so very few players are having time to develop. So it's, you have to have it right now, or we got to move on. Okay, we got to make split decisions. Oh, you don't have it right now? All right, let's get out of here so I don't get fired.
Yeah. I mean, that's basically what it is. That's the NFL in a nutshell now, especially at the quarterback spot. You have some guys, and not only that, Commissioner, you got to be a guy that works in the offseason. You got to work on your craft in the offseason. You can't be at Caesar's Palace kicking it with the honeys and, you know, making music videos or whatever, stuff like that. It's just, that's not the way it works nowadays, because defenses are constantly evolving and they're trying to figure out ways to beat you. They're trying to figure out ways to slow you down. You notice defensive linemen are getting smaller and they're a lot faster than they used to be because the quarterback position has evolved. The offensive linemen are a lot leaner. They look like D tackles and defensive ends now, right, because the game has evolved where they have to run more. So as a quarterback, you have to see this. That's why they incorporated more RPOs into the NFL. This is the year I've seen more RPOs in the last couple of weeks from Patrick Mahomes, from Lamar Jackson to Kyler Murray, because that's what they ran in college. And it stresses the defense when you have a quarterback back there that can do that. He could stick the ball in there and pull it out and run for like 5 or 6 yards. Or if that's not the case, he can stick it in there and hit you down the field for like a 15-yard pass. So, yeah, it's one of those things. The game is evolving, man. And as a quarterback, you have to evolve and change every year.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I've been hearing. I've been reading and listening to a lot of people talk about as watching Jacksonville. And they're saying that's the thing that's hurting Jacksonville, actually, because what do we know Urban Meyer for? We know him for that spread offense. But what he did when he got down to Jacksonville, he got a bunch of NFL assistants, and they weren't using that. And he even said that he wanted Trevor Lawrence to be a professional quarterback, what we think of as a professional quarterback. And so you're not allowing him to be comfortable in what he was doing, because he was doing some of that at Clemson. He's not allowing him to do that. He's forcing him to be into a mold that maybe he's not quite used to right now. So the learning curve is going to be a lot steeper for him.
Yeah, I think that in order for young quarterbacks, especially like Trevor Lawrence, you got to put them in, you got to put a package of plays in that make them comfortable. You know, you talk about Jalen Hurts when he came to Atlanta and they did what they did. You saw early on they had plays where he got out of the pocket. They ran RPOs and things like that. And as he got comfortable, as the game progressed, then you saw him throwing from the pocket. It's all about getting comfortable, man. I mean, because you got a lot. Young quarterbacks have a lot to process. You got to figure out what coverages you're going to try to throw the ball against. You got to figure out the block, whether the offensive line figure out the blocking schemes. You got to figure out where the holes are in the defenses when you figure out what they're doing, either zone or man. And with all of that being said, you got these big defensive ends and defensive tackles breathing down your neck trying to break your back. So in order to have success, I think that there should be plays that are involved in the offense that help the young quarterbacks get comfortable. Plays that they probably ran in college. The name might be different.
Right.
But what you run is similar to what you did in college, so you're comfortable with it. Bread and butter plays. And that way, you know, you get them comfortable. And as the season progresses, then you start to give them a little bit more to offense and allow them to grow and do different things. I think that's how you get better as a quarterback.
And now, with that being said, I'd like to get your take on who's probably one of the – who do you think – which quarterback – because, you know, we had whether it was Mac Jones, Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, we had all these guys, even Justin Fields, who's probably going to start this week now that the Red Rifle is injured. Who would you predict – who are you predicting at the beginning of the season to have the most success with their team?
You know what? It's kind of hard to say with quarterbacks. I think right now the higher passer rating between all the young guys, I think Mac Jones has the highest passer rating, if I'm not mistaken right now. And, you know, but that really kind of doesn't surprise me, because all of the stories you heard about him coming out of Alabama was the fact that he was mature way beyond his years, and the bravado that he showed when he was talking about, you know, Cam Newton being cut, and he really wasn't too much worried about that. So Mac, I think Mac is in a good position. And, you know, he's up there in New England, you know, coming off of those Tom Brady years. People love that about him. You know, he's going to have moments where he's going to look like a rookie. I mean, and just have to work through that. That's the biggest thing, man. I think about guys back in my day when I played, before me. Troy Aikman had a horrendous rookie season. Bounced back.
1-15, right?
Something like that. Peyton Manning had a horrendous rookie season. But when they came back that second season, man, different guys. Some guys, you know, it just all depends on who you are. You know, it's that old Rocky adage. It's not about how many times you get hit. It's how many times you get hit and get back up. Right. And I the same thing with the quarterback. Like, you're talking about two guys, and Peyton Manning especially. There was nothing at that point. After he had that rookie year, he never looked back. He became a totally different quarterback, and he became one of those guys. When you saw him under center, and there was 2 minutes left on the clock, and it was time to drive, you knew you probably had a problem because he was going to make it happen.
Yeah, definitely. I found it interesting, too, that they – so I'm watching Monday Night Football. The Manning brothers have the Monday Night Football broadcast if you watch, like, ESPN2. Mm-hmm. So I didn't realize this the first week. So first week I'm watching it, and I'm on Twitter. I got the computer beside me. I'm looking on Twitter, and everybody keeps talking about this. Peyton Manning, Peyton said this, Peyton said that, Eli said this. And I'm like, what the hell are they watching? Like, I'm confused. So at the probably third quarter, I realized, oh, it's on ESPN2. I flip it over, and it was Peyton, Eli, and Russell Wilson. Mm-hmm. And it's just like three dudes talking football. I mean, the game is going on. They're not, like, doing play-by-play. Nobody's really doing, like, he's handing off to such and such. They're not doing it. Like, but, and then so I liked it, and I came back, and literally this week when Green Bay was playing Detroit, Peyton basically broke down Detroit's defense, and he's sitting there, he's telling you they got too high. You know, they got too high safeties up. You know, they're playing cover two, whatever. He was like, basically, Green Bay is going to kill them with the run, and that's basically, he's going to kill them with the run and everything underneath. And you were literally, like, if you were a football nerd, you want to kind of listen to a quarterback break down coverages and stuff like that, it was insightful to me. And my wife came down, and she was like, what the hell? Well, like, what are you watching? Like, this ain't, don't sound like the normal broadcast. And I was like, nah, it's Peyton, Eli, and I think they had Gronk on this week. So they have a little guest on with them. But, yeah, it was like you said, it's like getting inside the mind of a coach slash player, because – they were just talking football, breaking it down. Eli's rewinding it back. Eli's controlling the clicker. He's winding it back and going back over coverages. And it was dope. Like, I thought that was a pretty cool thing for ESPN to do. And, you know, I mean, maybe they just had a contract already with the Mannings and felt like, hey, we got to make them do something. So,
well, I think the biggest thing is nobody came like the quarterbacks, mm-hmm. especially when you talk about both sides of the ball. I mean, because they have to know what defense, they got to know how to beat the defenses. They got to know the routes the receivers are running. They got to know the protection that the center calls in order to protect the quarterback. So nobody knows the game as well as they do. And then you're talking about two guys with their dad. When you talk about him being Archie Manning, you're talking about decades and decades of football knowledge. They probably been breaking down film when they were kids. You know, just learning different coverages and how to beat cover beaters. Because, you know, you hear about Arch Manning and how good he is.
Right.
And he's in high school, you know. So it was great to see, man, because it looked like it was a comfortable situation. And they didn't talk, even though they were talking a lot of football and they got real deep, you never felt like they were talking over your head.
Right. I would say that. I would definitely agree to that. Moving it over to the other side of the ball real quick, like, what – is there a must-see defense for you? Like, if you, when you sit down and say, okay, whether it's the Ravens, whether it's Washington, whoever, is there a game that when you sit down and you say, okay, who they're playing, I want to watch that defense.
You know, I haven't got a chance to see them yet, but I want to see that Washington football team defense. And I saw a little bit of it the other night. Chase Young, I saw him run somebody down the field when they played the Giants, but I didn't get a chance to see the whole game. I want to see them play, man, and I want to watch him work. because I've heard a lot of good things about that young man, you know, and his work ethic and everything. So I want to watch him work. I want to watch that Washington football team defense do their thing.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance. I haven't seen him as much this year, but I know last year when he was, it was like they let him loose, and he was killing quarterbacks. I think they might have they played the Patriots last year. Mm-hmm. And even Cam was talking about, Cam was like, dang, this dude, you know, like this dude was all over me. I couldn't do a damn thing. So yeah, he's a beast out there, man. What do you think about Michael Parsons over there at Dallas? Cause he seems to be another one that's just all over the place. That it just seems to be like a ball hawk. Like if the ball, he's always around the football.
You're talking about the young linebacker, right?
Right.
Oh, man, he's fast. I know he's fast. And you know, he's aggressive, highly aggressive. I like the way he plays, even though he's a Dallas Cowboy. I like the way that he plays. I think he has a tremendous upside. He just needs to do a little bit. Sometimes he got caught. I watched a little bit of Tampa Bay game. He got caught peeking a couple times.
Right.
He's going to get better. But you like the fact that he's 100 miles an hour. And that's the one thing that you cannot do as a coach. You can't coach 100 miles an hour. And he loves the game of football. So he's going to be all right. He's going to take his little lumps this year. But I think he's going to be a much better player for it. And that motor, he got a high motor, man.
Yeah, and that was one of the things that highlighted Hard Knocks kind of highlighted. You know, just if you're watching everything around with football, they put it out there and they followed him around during Hard Knocks. And it kind of made me notice him. You know, and that's the good thing about Hard Knocks. They kind of make you notice people who you – may have just been an afterthought, just didn't know one of the guys in the back of your mind. So I started watching him. And like you said, when I watched the Tampa Bay game, I was like, damn, this dude is really all over the place. He's just one of those guys, man, that you just see that if it's a play happening, if he didn't make it, he's right there or he was somewhere near it and helped it happen. So, yeah, I always wish, and I'm going to bring it back locally here before, so we can go ahead and wrap it up. So like I said, I know you got to head out, but I'm going to bring it back locally to see that what is it that I won't say that I won't just go out and just blame our scouting department, but we haven't had one of those guys on defense. Like we thought we had one with Deion. Grady's a great guy in terms of interior linemen, but we haven't had one of those linebackers. Like I said, I thought we had it with Deion Jones, but it hasn't just continued.
I think, man, that's a hard one because, you know, you talk about some of the guys that he drafted. Like, the game is won and lost in the trenches. You talk about Vic Beasley was here. You talk about Tack McKinley. Mm-hmm. These were first-round draft picks that aren't even on the team anymore. I remember Vic Beasley got drafted, man. That was probably my first year here in Atlanta. Like, that's like 7 years ago. He's not even on the squad. Tack came a couple years after that, and they were supposed to be your pass rush. Man, that's a tough one, man, because you just never know. Same thing with quarterbacks. You just never know. You got to take one every year because of a pool of guys that you have, and you hope one of them pan out. Man, you got to have that one, too. I always said that defensive players, especially defensive linemen, are built different. You got to be a little crazy, man.
Yeah.
play up front. You definitely have to be a little crazy to play up front. And you gotta find, like, I remember talking to Travis Slayton. He was talking about trying to find NBA players. And he said the one thing that he always tried to listen for was guys who just weren't happy with being drafted. Mm-hmm. They saw something bigger for themselves. I think it's probably the same thing when it comes to NFL, man, and drafting pass rushers. Because when you look at the long lineage of guys that have played that position, you talk about Lawrence Taylor was a pass rusher. You talk about Leslie O'Neal. I'm going back old school, San Diego Chargers, Leslie O'Neal, Clyde Simmons, guys like that, Reggie White, Bruce Smith. You know, those guys, they enjoy immensely putting pressure on quarterbacks and getting after people. You got to kind of have that, man. Like our guy Rob Tripper, you say, a guy I worked with, you got to have that want to, man. You got to have that one, and you got to have that drive. And that's the thing that you have to look for. But, you know, a lot of kids nowadays, man, you look at the young NFL players now, and it's different from when I grew up because you have so many different outlets. Like, I look at it like this. I think some cats look at the NFL, and they have the ability as seed money. to go do something else that you want to do in life. So you're gonna have to, like, if you want those guys that football's in their blood and you know that's what they want to do and they want to be great at it, you're gonna have to do a little bit more digging, man. Because I don't think Vic was that kind of guy. I think he had aspirations to do other stuff, and I don't think Tack was that guy. I mean, just an example of the two people that we're talking about. So yeah, you got to dig deep when you're going out to find those kind of guys. Like Grady's one of those guys. Football's in his blood.
Yeah, I think you hit it on the head when you said that you have to have like this generation, because it's, everything is so on the phone. Everything is right here, and that determines your celebrity status. So when you find someone and they play football or they play basketball or baseball or whatever, they're like you just said, that seed money. They're looking at it as this is a stepping stone to my celebrity and to me becoming a huge star. Like, we can still sit here and talk about Odell Beckham being one of the biggest stars in the NFL, and he hasn't played a game in about, 2 years?
Yeah. Yeah, because of what he's done in the past. And you know, the dances and the catches. He got famous off of one catch in a losing game. He was playing against the Dallas Cowboys, and he caught a catch with one hand. And they ended up losing that game, but nobody, if you watched those memes and the way that people went crazy, you would have never known. You would have never. And that's just how it's gone for Odell Beckham.
So before I let you go, I wanted to bring it a little local real quick, because I know you're on the radio here locally. This week, the Atlanta Falcons play the New York Giants. What do the Falcons have to do to get in the W column?
Man, they got to play better offensively. They got to protect the quarterback a little bit better. I think this game against the Giants is a winnable game, though.
Right.
I think it's a winnable game. I think Josh Daniels, I think that's the name of the young quarterback. He is going to – I think that they're going to look at that game with Jalen Hurts, and they're going to try to run the ball with him a little bit because – of the fact that Jalen Hurts has success running the ball. So I think they're going to do that. But the defense showed some fight last week. They just have to keep it tame, man. They keep the young quarterback in the pocket and make him play quarterback from the pocket. I think that they have a chance to win. I think we saw Kyle Pitts. He had a pretty good game last week. He had 5 catches with 73 yards. Not a bad start for a rookie tight end. Got to get him involved a little bit more. Mike Davis, got to run the ball a little bit more aggressively. So yeah, I think they have a chance to win this game, man. But those are the things that need to happen in order for the Atlanta Falcons to win.
Yeah, I think this hopefully, to me, in my opinion, this could possibly be a defense booster, because Daniel Jones will put it on the floor. Like, he has, like, he'll take off.
Yeah.
Like, he's an athletic quarterback.
I call him Josh Daniels. Right, Daniel Jones.
He's an athletic quarterback. He'll get loose. He'll wiggle out. But if you can get to him when he wiggles out, he'll put the thing on the carpet, and that will probably, hopefully, generate a turnover or two, and then we can get, you know, we can generate some kind of confidence.
Yeah, I called him Josh Daniel Jones. That's his name. I knew it was something like that. But yeah, I mean, you got a chance. This is a winnable game. This is definitely a winnable game.
Yeah. Once again, like I said, I know you got to take off. I appreciate it. Hope we can do it again, you know, coming up soon.
Definitely. And
once again, you're tuned to the Commissioner's Conversation with your host, Commissioner Gordon, with my special guest, Hugh Douglas. I appreciate everyone for tuning in. Until next week, I'll holler.
Peace.
Okay, bye.